Welcome to another series of Accessing Justice podcasts hosted by CommuniCourt. Following our first series of podcasts, we are delighted to launch another series, this time focusing on hidden disabilities and disorders which can affect a person's communication. In today's podcast, I'm very excited to be welcoming Becky Clark of Clark SLT. Becky is a highly experienced speech and language therapist, having worked in various specialist and mainstream schools as a therapist, but also having done extensive training of various professionals. She has worked as a head of therapy in a special school and held research officer roles at universities. Becky is also a co-founder of Raddled, that is R-A-D-L-D, YouTube campaign, which was launched in 2012 to raise awareness and understanding of DLD. For those who do not know, DLD is short for Developmental Language Disorder, and Becky has very kindly agreed to join us in this week's podcast to talk about this often hidden disorder. So, a warm welcome, Becky, and thank you so much for joining us for a conversation.
Thank you, Maya. Thank you for inviting me. It's great to have the opportunity to talk about DLD with you on this podcast.
So, my very first question to you, Becky, is what is DLD?
Yeah, so as you said, it stands for Developmental Language Disorder, and DLD is a kind of difficulty with communication. So there's a variety of communication differences or difficulties that exist, differences including stammering, voice disorders, the sorts of things that speech and language therapists support, speech and articulation challenges. And within this group of communication differences, we have something, a condition called language disorder. And within language disorder, we have developmental language disorder, or DLD. So if you imagine three circles, communication, and then within that, language disorder, and within that, DLD. So DLD is about difficulties with processing of spoken language, and it occurs as part of a child's development rather than being something that's acquired through a brain injury, for example.
So it's something that is already there from birth?
Yes, yeah, part of development, yes.
Would it be fair to say that it might be genetic?
Yeah, so there's links, you know, a parent or a sibling may have dyslexia or may have DLD or traits of. So, yes, there's definitely sort of some hereditability.
So what kind of criteria would warrant a diagnosis?
So there's some quite specific criteria. There's three elements to this. So one is that the language difficulties create obstacles to communication or learning in everyday life. So it provides barriers for that person. Mm-hmm. It's persistent. So it's likely to persist beyond 5 years. We're not talking about when a child's a late talker and catches up. DLD can be diagnosed preschool, but it's harder to know because that child might be a child that catches up with their talking. And we're talking about a difficulty with spoken language in a person's first language. So the language and words used in everyday conversations and life activities. If additional languages are spoken, then those would be affected as well. So yeah, those are the criteria.
Interesting. So it goes across different languages as well. So it really is, it's not about the system of the language, but system of the brain, I suppose.
Yeah.
Interesting. So Becky, what's the difference between DLD and language disorder then?
So language disorder is a broader category and includes a group of people who have language difficulties along with what's called a biomedical condition. So something like autism or a genetic disorder or intellectual disability. So if somebody has one of those types of conditions, we'd say that, and they have language difficulties, we just use the term language disorder and say something like autism with language disorder. For those people who don't have those conditions, we use the term developmental language disorder. And for DLD, it is possible to have other co-occurring conditions such as dyslexia or ADHD or DCD. And I suppose important to say that, you know, a lot of the things we're going to talk about in this discussion are, although we're talking about DLD, they'll be relevant for a language disorder associated with another condition. And I think, you know, we're particularly focusing on DLD because it's without those other conditions, it's often hard to spot. It's the one that gets missed.
So how does DLD manifest itself?
So people may have heard of therapists or other people talking about expressive language difficulties and receptive language difficulties. Now, these tend to go hand in hand, but often people talk about these two aspects. So expressive language is about using language, talking. So when a person speaks, so what I'm doing now, I'm talking and using my expressive language skills. And understanding language is the other side of the coin, understanding what someone's saying. And we use the term receptive language. So you're sort of receiving the language. It's what people listening to the podcast hopefully will be doing now, using their receptive language skills, taking in those words and interpreting them, getting the message, trying to make sense of them. And then as well as that, it's important to be aware that someone would have difficulties with learning language. So acquiring new vocabulary, for example, if new words are introduced.
Okay.
And of course, we use language for writing. So not surprisingly, written language can be affected. And when we read, this involves understanding language. So it's not just the decoding. What does these words say? We've got to understand and make sense of what we're reading. So DLD can affect both spoken communication and written communication. Now, language processing is really pretty complex. We kind of take it for granted. And those of us who find it okay, you know, we don't sort of think about the complexities of it. So there's lots of different things that can go wrong or be challenging. And in terms of the kind of difficulties that speech and language therapists look at on a kind of linguistic level, we can have difficulties with semantics, so word meanings, understanding word meanings, pragmatic language. So that's about the use of language in context and understanding language in the context it's said. Grammar, we call syntax and morphology. Phonological issues, so that's about processing of sounds. Verbal learning and verbal memory, so holding on to language in memory. And word retrieval, being able to recall words from memory when talking. Now, I realise this is sort of quite jargony, and I think we're going to go on and talk about some of that, actually what this really means and looks like. But those are the sorts of terminology that therapists sometimes use. And just to say, it's, you know, it really is each person's profile is different. So you can have a different combination of these kind of difficulties or strengths within language.
So what sort of expressive difficulties might one come across?
So functionally when talking, difficulties could be kind of with words, with sentences, or with giving the right information to make themselves clear. So at a word level, we might see a limited vocabulary and someone using a limited range of words in their talking. They might use the wrong word. For example, I remember a student talking about saying a teacher was stalking them, and actually they didn't mean stalking, it turned out, thankfully.
Or what did they mean?
They meant, I think, hovering over them, behind them in their ICT lesson.
There's a fine difference.
Or they might use, you know, make a slight error in how they say a word, like say dismotivated rather than demotivated. They can have difficulties with accessing the words that they want to say. So we call them word finding difficulties. And you might hear them say thingy or what's it, or there'll be long pauses while they're trying to access the word. Or some young people I've worked with tend to skip over those words and just sort of, you know, sort of avoid showing that they're struggling to access the words and just kind of skip over them.
Might they swap words as well sort of like just use a completely random word or something similar?
Yeah, and I suppose there's sort of two elements there, sometimes sort of putting in something similar, which might be a good strategy, or they might use by accident sort of use the wrong word.
Right.
And think they're using the right word.
Right. Sounds similar, but just isn't.
Yeah.
Quite. I understand. Absolutely. Yeah. Interesting.
And then a sentence level, being able to explain something when they're talking, they might use the wrong tense or struggle to put words in order to get the message across, in the right order to get the message across, or miss out words. So affecting sort of how clear hopefully they can explain themselves. And then we have this level, this area called pragmatic language. And I describe this as being able to give the right information so the listener can understand. So somebody might have the words and their grammar might be okay, they can put the sentences together, but they don't necessarily tell you what's relevant when they're explaining something, or tell things in a helpful order, or are succinct about it. They might give lots of detail about something or go off at a tangent. And, you know, listeners might be aware that those sorts of language processing difficulties are often seen in people with autism, but also can occur as part of DLD.
Right. Okay. So staying on topic might be very difficult, or talking at length about something that perhaps sort of is related to the topic, but not exactly. For example, in a court situation, you might have a question and the person doesn't quite answer the question, but talks about the topic, for example, in a more generic way, rather than actually answering the specific question, for example.
Yeah. And might struggle to give you kind of the key points that you need to know, or not kind of give the background, who, where, when. I think, you know, when giving an account of an event, you know, that is something really to be aware of. That they might need
lots of prompt questions, those what we call WH questions, who, what, where, when, how, why, specifically, separately, so that they're able to give more information. What about the receptive difficulties? So understanding language, what might one see with a person who has DLD?
So on an understanding side of things, again, sort of at the word level, they may have a limited vocabulary. So not be understanding the words that you use as you might expect them to. So less common vocabulary is likely to be an issue, and learning new words can be challenging. But also more abstract words or phrases can be particularly challenging. So it's not, so when it's something that you can't see, or when the meaning is different to that in everyday conversation. In the justice system, perhaps words or phrases like appeal or in the best interests of are quite abstract. Something being common, you know, that can have different meanings.
Yes, absolutely. We often find phrases such as court rise can be quite challenging. So someone might think of it literally, what does that mean, rise? Or that the court will rise for 15 minutes, meaning that there is a break. But someone might think that we're just going to stand for 15 minutes. We often find these types of difficulties, absolutely. Yes, and figurative language in general.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think, you know, there's going to be a lot of court language, isn't there, that's quite technical and specific, or potentially thinking things like declare, or even sort of words that are more everyday, like summary, give a summary and summarise.
Yes.
That, you know, a person with DLD may not be quite sure what that means. It's one of those abstract concepts. And I think it's, you know, it might be, these sorts of difficulties might be hidden because somebody might have some good vocabulary in particular areas, or in the kind of everyday conversation, their vocabulary might seem fine. So there might be surprising gaps there in their knowledge and vocabulary. So we've got to be aware both on kind of the technical language, but also, you know, some of the everyday language. And at a sentence level then, so that's sort of word level, at sentence level, understanding sentences that are a bit longer or a bit more complicated. So I've got some examples here. Things like if you use the word unless or until, and using negatives or doubled negatives, and conditional language, so those if type phrases. So things like if I said, don't do that unless you need to. There's quite a lot of processing that has to go on there to work out, do I need to do that? I don't know. If you didn't see that, you might want to let me know. It's just hard to process. So, and things like understanding before and after are often affected. So if I said, before you do A, I want you to do B. So I've said A and then B, but actually, I want you to do B and then A.
I understand. Right. Yes, of course. So it's basically a different chronology to the words that you're using. So that creates a confusion.
Yeah. So yes. Somebody might process that as do A then B, because that's the order that it came in the sentence.
Yes, of course. Yes, we've got quite often people that we work with have difficulties with these complex question types. And that, of course, is a difficulty during questioning, but also in conferences with the barristers or solicitors. And so we often find, for example, tag questions very difficult for a person to process. So you didn't close the window, did you? And the person is thinking, oh, am I supposed to say yes or no to this? If I say yes, am I saying yes, I did close the window? Am I saying no, I did not close the window? So it becomes confusing. So if you say just yes, are you agreeing with closing the window or are you agreeing with not closing the window? Yeah. So these kind of questions are commonly difficult with people we work with. And so it's fascinating that it is absolutely part of DLD well.
And then sort of picking up on, you talked about non-literal phrases you mentioned, so that kind of comes under that pragmatic language. So somebody might understand the individual words and sentences, but when these sorts of phrases are used, that they may struggle to kind of interpret what they mean. So things like turn a blind eye or have a run in with someone or hit the roof, those sorts of phrases.
Let's play it by ear.
Yeah,
a personal favorite. Yeah. Or when someone votes with their feet.
It can be
difficult for anyone if they haven't come across it. You need to use all kinds of clues in order to make sense of a new figurative phrase you hear.
Somebody with these sorts of difficulties, I think as you or I would probably spot that this phrase didn't make sense literally. And so we'd be using the context to think, oh, what do they probably mean by that? Whereas somebody with difficulties with that might not realise and be just trying to interpret it literally. And then there's also sort of an area called inferencing, sort of linked to that, really. So reading between the lines, what did somebody really mean, even though it wasn't explicitly stated? So sort of simple example would be something like, if I said, oh, I spent the day building sandcastles with Jenny and she particularly enjoyed knocking them over. I've not said we're at the beach, but you might have inferred that. I've not said that Jenny was a young girl, but you might have inferred that. We're sort of constantly linking up all these bits of information and filling in gaps when we're understanding what people are saying.
Absolutely. And that is very common in court where, again, particularly in questioning process, it can be very difficult for a person to. So questions would need to be very explicit, signposted and very clear to what is being referred to so that the person can really focus on what the sort of key element of that question is.
Yeah. What's exactly being asked here? Rather, I guess open questions can be quite hard, can't they? What does this person really want me to tell them from this very sort of wide open question? And then I wanted to mention about time concepts. So this kind of goes across receptive and expressive language. But in my experience, the language of time seems to be a particularly sort of sensitive to going wrong or sort of not being understood and frequently an issue. And I think it's because two reasons. One is time is so abstract. So kind of learning what these words mean is difficult because you can't see what somebody's referring to. If we think about something like, let's say, a month or a season or even more afternoon means, or things like soon or often, these are abstract. And then also because time concepts can involve verbal memory. So being able to remember kind of January, February, March, April, May, or even the days of the week sequence. I've worked with, you know, the one particular student comes to mind who's very capable, secondary age student, sporty, doing all sorts of curriculum subjects, but hadn't nailed down the days of the week sequence, would get confused with Saturday and Sunday. And, you know, so quite surprising. And I think in your field, really something to be very aware of.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And of course, there are some cultural differences as well. So, for example, if you think about seasons, of course, we have four seasons that we think of, but some cultures do not. It's interesting.
And I think some of the language of charm, you know, we just take so for granted. I'm working with children and teenagers in schools, and this language that you have, like the school term or the half term or even just sort of afternoon and evening, you know, these words are used all the time, but actually that sometimes when you pin them down, these children don't know what they mean. And the number of children that I've worked with who confuse when I ask them to put morning, afternoon and evening in the right order, don't, and they go for morning, evening, afternoon, for example. And these are words that they will have heard, you know, hear constantly. And just, I suppose, somebody hasn't explicitly explained this is what this word means.
Another thing I've come across is quarter past, quarter to, half past. Then some people say half to, and you're thinking, well, is that half past two or is that half from two? And so it can be quite difficult to.
Absolutely. I think the language of telling the time in the analog time is tricky. Can be tricky for somebody with DLD. Why are you saying past and two and quarter and half?
Yes.
What those concepts mean sometimes.
So how does DLD impact everyday life then?
So I think we use language across our lives for everything, really, even if it's just thinking to ourselves, never mind communicating. So language difficulties can affect a person's life in many ways. So taking part in conversations, following a conversation that's already going on and being able to join in, answering questions accurately, knowing what they're agreeing to, knowing what they're being asked and agreeing to. And also other types of interactions, so perhaps understanding the rules of a game or understanding the rules that have been explained for a situation. And as a consequence, I think can have a big impact on social confidence and having to work pretty hard in social situations sometimes to kind of keep up with the language and what's being said. In the classroom, you know, curriculum language, the curriculum is so much spoken language, has so much spoken language in it. You know, even something like maths is very, very wordy. Even though we think of it as kind of numbers, it's very wordy. So understanding the curriculum or the language in the workplace and other sort of more formal situations where there might be complex language. And I think important to, you know, really be thinking about not just spoken language, but the written language as well. So reading information. Somebody might also have dyslexia and struggle to kind of decode the language, but we've got to be aware that somebody who can read the words might still not be understanding them.
Yes, of course. And we read a lot throughout the day, from whenever we wake up all the way until when we go to bed. There's a lot of reading, whether it's timetables, material from school.
A letter through the post,
yes.
You know, an email explaining what you need to do, some instructions from the court. I don't know, you know.
Yeah.
You need it.
Absolutely.
And then I think from a life skills and independence point of view, language difficulties can affect that area of life. So reading and writing are involved, as we're sort of saying, in kind of everyday life tasks, looking things up on the internet, following instructions, answering questions on the phone. You know, if you need such and such, press 3, you know, and being able to kind of deal with those sort of everyday problems. And then also an interesting area really about language and managing our emotions. And so, you know, we use language to understand our emotions and to manage our emotions. So, you know, if you haven't got the words to kind of, you know, we partly need the words to understand the concept. How am I feeling? And then to problem solve and, you know, work out what to do. You know, a lot of our thinking is in language. Yeah, everything, really.
Yes. That's right. So, thinking of DLD in the long term, does it continue into adulthood?
Yes, absolutely. So DLD is persistent and likely to be lifelong. So we need to think about sort of supporting people across the lifetime, and how it affects a person on a daily basis will vary enormously depending on lots of factors to do with their difficulties, to do with their strengths, to do with their environment and sort of the challenges that face them, I suppose. But I think it's, you know, it's really important to say that people with DLD can make progress with their language. They can learn strategies. They can learn key language that they need. And all these things can make a big difference.
So what type of support would you say is important for a person growing up with DLD?
For me, I think the most important thing to support as part of a sort of whole package really is helping that young person understand themselves, understand their own profile, helping them understand their strengths, you know, having a focus on their strengths too, helping them understand that there's nothing wrong with them, but we're just all different and they've got differences with their processing of language. And I think, you know, for some children who have had years of sitting in a classroom where they seem to be the only one who doesn't understand, you know, their self-esteem can be crushed by this. Mm. They're sort of masking on a daily basis. So I think then from building on this kind of understanding of themselves, we really need to help young people with DLD learn assertiveness skills. So being able to say something in an assertive way, not passive or aggressive, but, you know, this is what I need. This is how I communicate, you know, and self-advocating.
So that it's okay that I've got this difficulty. This is how we can overcome it. And yeah, I suppose I need your help with this.
Yeah. This is how I need you to communicate to me. Mm. But, you know, I think, you know, it might be just in a on a daily basis, being able to say to the shopkeeper, or can you, you know, the person at the till, can you say that again? Or, you know, in some situations, maybe in an interview, saying, oh, I have DLD, or I have these difficulties and I need you to understand at a deeper level. So there's sort of all those different levels, really. I think, you know, it is particularly hard to self-advocate if you have DLD for two reasons. One, because people don't know about DLD, so you're telling them about something they don't know about. And secondly, DLD, you know, is hard to explain. And if you have DLD, you have difficulties with explaining, you know, so there's a lot of challenges here. Yeah.
A bit of a catch-22.
We've got to do sort of our best to equip these young people with the confidence in themselves to self-advocate and communicate successfully.
I guess understanding, yes, but also accepting.
Yeah.
Yes. What kind of future difficulties might one see?
I think clearly this will really vary on depending on many factors, but would partly depend on the person's difficulties. And there's research that talks about protective factors as well. Things like having good social skills might protect you from sort of isolation or emotional issues. But research does show relationships with mental health, such as higher levels of depression and anxiety, impacts on self-esteem, relationships, higher rates of unemployment, and impacts on independence. But, you know, it is important to say that all these things can be supported. And, you know, and that's why I think it's, you know, it's really important that we do pick up these difficulties and help somebody understand what's going on for them. We can't make, in practice, we can't make assumptions that, you know, when we see somebody having emotional issues or issues with their mental health, whether it's directly related to DLD, but we do see some kind of indications of that. And in one of the films on the Rattle channel, I show a picture drawn by Harry of how he'd felt in the classroom. And the picture shows this lovely classroom with all these little pencil drawing of, you know, kids having fun, playing with each other, and then good work board and a bad work board. And it's Harry's name all over the bad work board. Of course, there wasn't a bad work board, but this was him just sort of portraying how he'd felt. And then over in the corner, there's one little boy sitting down facing the wall and crying. You know, oh, you know, heartbreaking to
that
see
is
this picture.
So heartbreaking.
And
yes.
For him, you know, he explained this was about him sort of not understanding and not being able to do the work like the other kids could do. So, yeah, that's my concern. The sort of major concern is really about DLD not being picked up and then kind of the potential impacts on self-esteem and vulnerability of kind of, you know, if you're masking and, you know, potentially then agree to things that you don't understand or go along, Yeah, and agree with what you did that, didn't you? Oh, yes, I'll say yes, even though I don't understand. You know.
Absolutely. And we come back to the complex questions again, questions that are phrased in a unusual way, or in a way that it's not straight away obvious, but also that invite a person to corroborate basically what might be an incorrect assertion.
But I think, I mean, I should add that, of course, you know, not of course, but, you know, people, adults with DLD are, you know, there's many of them. There are many of them across and happy and doing well in life and with relationships and successful jobs. I think time at school can be a particularly challenging time because it's such a wordy environment to be in.
Yeah. So seeing as it impacts a person clearly, or can impact a person quite severely, how does DLD usually get noticed?
Yeah, I this is a tricky one because I think, you know, when I show videos of young people with DLD, I think often professionals are quite surprised because you wouldn't notice immediately. Mm-hmm. So on the surface, you know, somebody could be quite good at a conversational level. So in terms of signs, one red flag at preschool is difficulties with understanding of language. But as I said, at preschool, you know, it can be a little bit tricky to know whether this is a child who's just a late talker and going to catch up. A particular sign will be a young person struggling with the curriculum, struggling with learning at school. And it might not always be clear why. You might see difficulties with reading and writing. So when we look at writing, we can see it. And so it's a bit more obvious than difficulties with talking. Or reading comprehension, for answering reading comprehension type questions. Another sort of area would be perhaps a child or young person not doing as they were asked. And this could be just because they've not understood.
I see. So misunderstanding might arise that they're willfully being disobedient.
Yeah. Mm. And I think also, you know, another area is sort of avoiding. So if you know something's going to be difficult or you're going to struggle to understand, then no surprise that, you know, a young person we can appreciate might avoid that situation, might avoid a lesson or a part of a lesson or an activity at work that they know they're going to struggle with and don't want to sort of expose themselves, expose their language difficulties. So I think sort of both what we might see as a kind of a person not behaving as we wish them to could be because they've not understood or because, you know, they're protecting their self-esteem really by trying to avoid these situations that they know they struggle with. Another thing that comes up quite often is that children are described as forgetful.
Interesting.
And or that they weren't listening, they don't listen well. Now, the person could have difficulties with attention as well, but there's a couple of things to say here from a listening point of view. If listening, processing language is really hard, then it's no surprise that sometimes you're going to switch off. You know, if somebody's speaking in a foreign language to you and you're quite good at that language, but not amazing, then listening to quite a bit of it is going to be take a lot of sort of brain power. And the person could be listening, but then might not be understanding. And it's interpreted as, oh, well, I told you that, but you clearly weren't listening. Or with forgetting, perhaps they didn't understand it in the first place. Or they understood, but haven't retained those words.
Right. And of course, it's a person with DLD. It is not an intellectual difficulty. So someone might come across as very able in many ways and then just have this one area where they struggle. Yeah. And therefore, it's not seen as a difficulty, but as a potentially willful behavior.
Yeah, absolutely.
Interesting. So is it easy to pick up if we think about all of these things?
I think it's really not easy to pick up generally, you know, and I suppose there will be some children who are picked up early and have very clear language difficulties. I guess particularly if it's with their expressive language, with their talking. But generally, DLD is not visible. You can't see difficulties with understanding. You can't see what's going on in somebody's brain, whether they're understanding or not. What we see is their outward response. And often people with DLD have fantastic strategies for getting by that they just have naturally developed. So I'm going to look around and see what other people are doing, or I'm going to nod and smile even though I don't understand. And yeah, you know, they can be good at masking, I suppose, and which is worrying, isn't it, that there could be greater things that they don't understand.
Absolutely, yes. And certainly within the justice system, that would be a potentially extremely detrimental to a person's case.
Yeah. And speech is often clear. So a person with DLD may have some issues with their tongue of pronunciation of certain words, but actually can be very clear. So a speech difficulty can be more obvious, but a language difficulty is more hidden. And as we said before, kind of good vocabulary can disguise areas of, so good vocabulary in some areas might make you think that, oh, this person's really verbally able. Yeah. Or somebody who can talk at quite at speed might sound verbally able, but actually they've got some big gaps.
Yes, of course. And speaking of words that one might know, of course, if you, for example, have a hobby or some kind of specific interest, then of course your vocabulary in that area is going to be probably quite good, because that's something you're exposed to all the time, and you've got a specific interest in it as well, as opposed to then perhaps, for example, legal terms or
or some of those everyday sort of abstract terms. And then I think you know, I think I said before, a conversational level, so somebody might be quite able, but when it's using more technical language, that can be harder. And we've got to be really aware also of how secondary difficulties or masking can cover up a language difficulty. And I think some of these, or other kind of difficulties, so something like attention, if a young person's got attention difficulties, ADHD, that might have had the focus, that might have been given the focus. So I think, you know, it's important for people working in your field to be aware that somebody may not have been diagnosed with DLD, but they may have significant language difficulties. So we've got to be kind of really tuned into that and be just, you know, really checking their understanding.
Right. So diagnosis is not a given.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. Somebody's strengths can also mask their difficulties. If somebody's really strong socially and knows when to nod in the right place or pick up the clues, you know, or is tuned into people, then that can really cover that sort of language difficulties that are going on behind the scenes.
Right. So if they've got very good pragmatic skills, that might cover up a lot of receptive difficulties, for example.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Yes, absolutely. So how common is DLD?
It's surprisingly common, and prevalence figures vary, but the research tells us that it's more common than autism, similar level of prevalence to dyslexia. So there was one study called the SCALE study, recently carried out by Professor Courtney Norbury in Surrey, and they found approximately 7.5% of children had got DLD. Now, this equates to around 2 in a class in the UK. We've got kind of 13 a class, or 1 in 15 children. So really, you know, pretty common. And it's why we set up the Rattled campaign to raise awareness of DLD and understanding.
Yeah, absolutely. That is really phenomenally common. So if it is so common, why haven't many people heard about DLD?
I suppose because, as we said earlier, you know, it's really hard to spot. It's not visible. It's not seen easily. But there's a number of barriers. I think also the nature of it is quite abstract. So what is language? What is language processing? It can be a little bit hard for people to get their heads around. You know, it's hard enough as a speech and language therapist to understand it. At the moment, DLD has quite low status in research funding. It doesn't get the kind of funding that other conditions of similar severity or prevalence get. And I think speech and language therapists don't have the highest status. You know, there's not that many of us, and we don't have a very high profile. And then in the terminology, until recently, has been inconsistent and confusing. And of course, if you're trying to tell people about something, but we're all using different words, different terms to talk about it, it's hard to get a message across. And although language difficulties. We've known about language difficulties for a very long time. We haven't had a consistent term until recently. Professor Dorothy Bishop at Oxford University carried out an analysis of Google Scholar, looking at the literature in this area, and found that 130 different terms had been used. 130
terms just to describe DLD.
Yeah, so this could be speech and language, it could be specific primary, developmental, and it could be disorder, impairment, difficulty, need. All these kind of words were being used. So fortunately, in around 2016-17, a couple of papers were published reporting on a consensus process led by Dorothy Bishop and Maggie Snowling at Oxford University, but involving academics, family, charity representatives and professionals, of which I was one. And a consensus was reached both on the criteria for DLD and the terminology. And DLD was the term that was agreed upon.
So when I was studying, I believe we called it specific language disorder. So do you think that the consensus of calling it DLD, as opposed to, for example, SLI or
one of the other 130
one of the other, whatever the other there have been, do you think the consensus of calling it DLD has made a difference?
I think it's been massive. I think it's been a real major turning point. And I think for me, it's not about, you know, as a professional, it's like, it doesn't matter to me what the term used is. I mean, it obviously will matter to somebody with DLD, you know, if they're happy with that term or not. And there's issues around that, you know, whether disorder is the right term for to describe differences. But in terms of raising awareness, you know, we really needed one term. So I think, you know, it's been this major turning point and has resulted in sort of the whole Raddled campaign being able to kind of escalate. And now we've got lots more kind of resources coming out focused on DLD. I mean, there might have been plenty of resources out there before, but they're all called for different things, you know, or not there. So resources, support groups, online Facebook groups, conferences, and things like podcasts on DLD.
Which is why we're here.
exactly. So yeah, I think it's really massively helped.
What sort of advice would you give for those communicating with someone with DLD?
Yeah, I was thinking about this and I think, you know, there's lots of potential things to say, but I'm going to narrow it down to kind of three, and three that would support their understanding. So if you're talking to somebody with DLD and explaining something, number one, and these will be very familiar to you, Maya, but number one will be check the person's understanding. Now, you might normally just say, does that make sense? And you're probably nodding while you say it. And somebody with DLD might just go, oh, yes, but it might not. So we need to go a little bit deeper than that and make it fine that it's okay if it doesn't make sense. You know, I want you to feel completely comfortable to tell me if it doesn't make sense. And do things like, can you explain to me what you've understood there? Yeah, so asking them to explain back.
Absolutely. I quite often say, just to make sure that I have explained this properly, can you tell me back what I just said?
Yeah,
and that often is it sort of takes the onus away from the person to kind of make it kind of my issue rather than their issue, which of course it is. If they have a difficulty in understanding, it is my job to make sure that they've understood.
Yeah, absolutely. I've sort of explained to young people with DLD that, you know, the communication is two way and it's just as much the other person's responsibility to be explaining in a way that you can understand.
Absolutely. You know?
So, and it might be helpful to have visuals there that sort of say, I've understood yes, no, or not sure. And I've found young people are often a little bit happier to point to the not sure or admit not sure than, no, I've got no idea what you're talking about. So it just gives a little bit of a get out there. And often we do have a bit of a gist of something, but we're not fully sure.
Yes, of course. It doesn't mean that one doesn't understand anything of what is said. It's just that perhaps not the key point, and that is the bit that can cause difficulties.
Yeah. So that's number one, sort of checking understanding. Number two is really about simplifying language, reducing the language of your explanation, simplifying the language of explanations and of written explanations. So in practice, that means make it less wordy. Take out words that you don't need, shorter sentences, less information. When talking more slowly. Obviously, we don't want to sound patronising. You're not talking to somebody like they're younger than they are, but as an adult, but just sort of being careful how much you say. Swapping out technical words where you can. So perhaps even, swapping out more complex everyday words, something like declare. So instead of saying declare it, you might just say, can you say it? Summarize instead of saying summarize. Can you give me the most important points? And remember that word learning is likely to be a challenge. So you might explain some of these technical words and they might get the idea at the time, but then remembering those words 5 minutes later or a day later or a week later is likely to be a challenge. So we need to think about how that's supported and perhaps through a kind of a visual. Okay, here's this word that you're going to hear and here's a visual that goes with it. And, and give you this to take away or I'll bring it out next time. So that's number two. And then number three is a focus on visual supports. So we might use visuals for word meanings, but also for a range of information to really support understanding of spoken or written language.
Hmm.
Visuals are helpful because spoken language is transient. It's gone. Once you've said each word, they're gone. And language is sequential, so we have to, our understanding is built on, we've got to hold on to those words that have just been said to make sense of a full sentence, or longer. So whereas with visuals, they stay there and you can look at them again and again to understand the meaning of something. And you can see a whole picture in one go and how things relate to each other. So like a map of something.
Mm. Yes, or a diagram, for example, maybe for time concept, something like a timeline with pictures. Yeah. Yes, yeah.
Absolutely. Yes. I think, that's probably one of the kind of crucial areas, isn't it? Having a timeline of, it might be of events coming up and time mapped out and then some little arrows and symbols of, this is what's going to happen when.
Mm.
Because
yes.
Just saying all these words and, this is going to happen then and this is going to happen then. Well, the person may have difficulties with the time concepts or they might not quite understand what you're saying. Holding all that information is hard.
Mm. Or mind map, key point. How does that affect other different areas? Yeah, absolutely. And actually, we all use those. If you think about any of the meetings we've been to or yeah. Learning new things, we all use mind maps or mm-hmm. some kind of diagrams to show progress, yeah. For example.
Yeah. And our anything. Thinking and mm-hmm. how things relate and thinking about, decision making and consequences. So, that could involve a lot of that kind of conditional language. Well, if you do this and if you do that, da, 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 and holding those things. Whereas if you map it out visually in a little flow diagram, this is what will happen. It can be seen, would be helpful.
Mm.
So, yeah. And I think, in our everyday lives, if you compare it to, if I was to give you directions somewhere and I just gave you a whole series of directions, that you had to hold in your head versus I gave you a map and you can see where you are and you can refer back to it. It's trying to give a visual map for things that might be explained verbally.
Yeah. We all use Google Maps.
I think I had there's a little girl at the, well, she was a little girl in one of the Radov films. And at the very end of it, she says, I think this just summarizes it really. It's better to show stuff instead of yapping along. So in summary, less yapping, more showing.
I like that. I think that is advice that we can all follow.
Yeah.
So we're coming to the end of the podcast. Where can one go for more information about DLD?
So yeah, there's lots of different resources out there now. I would point people to the Raddald YouTube channel, so RADLD on YouTube, for lots of films. There's films that we created at the beginning, and now there's lots of community films as well, which are amazing, you know, young people or adults sharing their experiences of DLD, so that we can really understand what it's like. Some of those films will talk about SLI, specific language impairment, that was before the consensus. And then the Raddald website, which is amazing, sort of now run by an international committee. And the Raddald website will have lots of different, point you in lots of different directions for different resources. And just to mention, there's DLD Awareness Day now every year in Friday in October. So encourage people to get involved in that to help raise awareness. So there's Raddald, there's NAPLEC, an organisation for professionals in the UK who are working with people in young people in this area. Speech and Language UK for a range of information for professionals or parents. This was formerly ICANN. A charity called Aphasic, and that's for families of those with speech, language and communication needs, but with a particular focus on DLD. And then a couple more. There's a lovely organisation called Talking Trouble in New Zealand, which focuses on speech, language and communication needs and supporting children and adults in a range of services, including the justice system. And I've seen some really nice resources on there that sort of might be of help in your field. But there's plenty more out there.
That's really great. Yeah. That would be really very helpful. And of course, yes, CommuniCourt have recently published quite a few quite helpful resources. So definitely check CommuniCourt website. Fantastic. Thank you very much, Becky. It has been very, very interesting talking about DLD, how it affects and manifests and how we might spot difficulties also within our field in the justice system, but also in everyday life as well. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much for having me. I hope it's been helpful.
Thank you to Becky Clark from Clark SLT for that fantastic podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please let us know on our social media channels. You can also find more episodes of the Accessing Justice podcast on Podbean or Spotify. You can also visit our website for lots of information at www.communicourt.co.uk.